Part 1.
You are going to hear two people, Joanne and Ralph, talking about memories they preserved from their childhood. Listen to the text and choose the best answer, 1 to 10. There is an example, 0, at the beginning. You are going to hear the text twice. Do as much as you can the first time and complete your work the second time. Finally, you are going to have 60 seconds to finalize your answers. Now, you have 90 seconds to study the sentences below.
Now listen to the recording.
Joanne, you grew up in England.
Yes.
And you grew up in a big city or a small city?
Oh, a little village.
Little village.
About 6,000 inhabitants.
And was it in the northern part or of England?
Southwest.
Southwest.
Southwest England, yeah, in the county of Cornwall. And it's a coastal town. So we live right by the sea.
Did you ever go swimming in the sea?
For a long time, no, until I discovered wetsuits. And then the water became a lot less scarier. I didn't learn to swim until I was 14.
Wow.
So I found it difficult to learn to swim. They tried to teach me at school, and I just, you know, couldn't get on with armbands and those weird foam floats you had. And we used to go swimming on Fridays. Friday morning, you had to be at the car park, and the bus would pick you all up, take you off to the swimming pool, and the teacher would try to teach you to swim. If you missed the bus, I can't remember what I must have been about 7 or 8, and if you missed the bus, you had to go in with the 11-year-olds. That was the highest grade in primary school in England. You had to go in, and on Friday morning, they had maths. And the teacher used to give them an exercise whereby they had a grid full of numbers and you had to multiply them. So you had 1 to 10 one way, well, actually above that. And you had to multiply 6 by 21, 14 by 7 and things like that and put the answer into the grid. And I would rather sit in there and do 11-year-olds maths than go swimming. And a family friend taught me to swim when I was 14 by telling me to imagine the water was full of Smarties. Do you know what Smarties are? They're
no.
Like little chocolate sweeties.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Imagine the water's full of Smarties and I'm scooping up the Smarties with my arms. That worked really well for me. So scooping up the sweeties taught me to swim. And of course, wetsuits are very buoyant. So with my minimal swimming ability and a wetsuit, which kept me warm and up, I used to swim around and look in the rock pools and chase fish and stuff like that.
So you're a pretty good swimmer now.
No, I'm still not a very good swimmer.
Yeah.
I'm still not a strong swimmer by any stretch of the imagination, but I won't drown. But I'm not going to, you know, swim across any lakes or anything.
Swimming does seem to be a skill that you should learn when you're quite young.
But it's useful, isn't it? Because once you've fallen in that water, it's a bit late to start learning
it. Yes, yes. Now, all the adults I know who never learned how to swim when they were kids, they never become good swimmers.
Now, my dad has just learned in the last 3 years, and I think he's about 65 now.
Yeah.
And he went on a residential course. It cost a lot of money, and they guaranteed to teach you to swim in 2 weeks.
Wow.
And they did. So every day he spent like 6 hours in the pool, or he must have looked like a prune or wrinkled. But they did. They taught him how to jump in the water and everything, because he goes on wonderful holidays and could never enjoy it. They'd dock at these beautiful beach paradises, and he'd sit in the water and, you know, wiggle his toes while my mum would be out there harpooning fish and
stuff. That's good.
So I'm glad I learned then, so I can enjoy it, but I'm not a good swimmer by any stretch of the imagination.
Do you swim sometimes?
No, I did. They used to have a pool which was really warm. It was like 27 degrees and only a meter deep.
Yeah.
So that meant with my swimming ability, if I got tired, I could put my foot down and it wasn't too cold to get in, because I'm one of those stupid girls who stands on the side and goes, hoo, 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 and takes half an hour to get in, up to my ankles, up to my knees, up to my thighs. And if somebody splashes me, I scream. You know, one of those kind of girls. It's really bad. And this was actually quite warm, so it only took me about 3 minutes to get in as opposed to five.
Okay.
But they closed that pool, unfortunately, and the other pools, which are sports swimming pools and stuff, are cold. So,
yeah.
And they would probably just kick me out because it would take me too long to get in the pool, and everybody would get annoyed with me because they'd be waiting behind me. So no, I don't swim, I'm afraid.
Now you have 30 seconds to check and complete your work. Listen to the recording again.
Joanne, you grew up in England.
Yes.
And you grew up in a big city or a small city?
Oh, a little village.
Little village.
About 6,000 inhabitants.
And was it in the northern part or of
southwest.
England?
Southwest.
Southwest.
Southwest England, yeah, in the county of Cornwall. And it's a coastal town. So we live right by the sea.
Did you ever go swimming in the sea?
For a long time, no, until I discovered wetsuits. And then the water became a lot less scarier. I didn't learn to swim until I was 14.
Wow.
So I found it difficult to learn to swim. They tried to teach me at school, and I just, you know, couldn't get on with armbands and those weird foam floats you had. And we used to go swimming on Fridays. Friday morning, you had to be at the car park, and the bus would pick you all up, take you off to the swimming pool, and the teacher would try to teach you to swim. If you missed the bus, I can't remember what I must have been about 7 or 8, and if you missed the bus, you had to go in with the 11-year-olds. That was the highest grade in primary school in England. You had to go in, and on Friday morning, they had maths. And the teacher used to give them an exercise whereby they had a grid full of numbers and you had to multiply them. So you had 1 to 10 one way, well, actually above that. And you had to multiply 6 by 21, 14 by 7 and things like that, and put the answer into the grid. And I would rather sit in there and do 11-year-old's maths than go swimming. And a family friend taught me to swim when I was 14 by telling me to imagine the water was full of Smarties. Do you know what Smarties are? They're like little chocolate sweeties.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Imagine the water's full of Smarties and I'm scooping up the Smarties with my arms. That worked really well for me. So scooping up the sweeties taught me to swim. And of course, wetsuits are very buoyant. So with my minimal swimming ability and a wetsuit, which kept me warm and up, I used to swim around and look in the rock pools and chase fish and stuff like that.
So you're a pretty good swimmer now?
No, I'm still not a very good swimmer. I'm still not a strong swimmer by any stretch of the imagination, but I won't drown. But I'm not going to, you know, swim across any lakes or anything.
Swimming does seem to be a skill that you should learn when you're quite young.
But it's useful, isn't it? Because once you've fallen in that water, it's a bit late to start learning
it. Yes, yes. Now, all the adults I know who never learned how to swim when they were kids, they never become good swimmers.
Now, my dad has just learned in the last 3 years, and I think he's about 65 now.
Yeah.
And he went on a residential course. It cost a lot of money, and they guaranteed to teach you to swim in 2 weeks.
Wow.
And they did. So every day he spent like 6 hours in the pool, or he must have looked like a prune or wrinkled. But they did. They taught him how to jump in the water and everything, because he goes on wonderful holidays and could never enjoy it. They'd dock at these beautiful beach paradises, and he'd sit in the water and, you know, wiggle his toes while my mum would be out there harpooning fish and
wow,
stuff.
That's good.
So I'm glad I learned then, so I can enjoy it, but I'm not a good swimmer by any stretch of the imagination.
Do you swim sometimes?
No, I did. They used to have a pool which was really warm. It was like 27 degrees and only a metre deep.
Yeah.
So that meant with my swimming ability, if I got tired, I could put my foot down and it wasn't too cold to get in, because I'm one of those stupid girls who stands on the side and goes, hoo, 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 and takes half an hour to get in, up to my ankles, up to my knees, up to my thighs. And if somebody splashes me, I scream. You know, one of those kind of girls, it's really bad. And this was actually quite warm, so it only took me about 3 minutes to get in as opposed to five.
Okay.
But they closed that pool, unfortunately, and the other pools, which are sports swimming pools and stuff, are cold. So,
yeah.
And they would probably just kick me out because it would take me too long to get in the pool, and everybody would get annoyed with me because they'd be waiting behind me. So no, I don't swim, I'm afraid.
Now you have 1 minute to check and complete your work. This is the end of part one. Part two.
You are going to hear a story of a person named Bill Hartley who lost his luggage at Salt Lake City Airport. Listen to the story and answer the questions 1 through 10 with a few words. There is an example, 0, at the beginning. You are going to hear the text twice. Do as much as you can the first time, and finish your work the second time. At the end of the recording, you have 90 seconds to finalize your answers. Now you have 90 seconds to study the questions below.
Now listen to the recording.
The Air Transport Association estimates that 2.2 million people flew on airplanes last night, the largest number ever for a single night. While most travelers arrived home without incident, there were some problems: cancellations, delays, and plenty of lost or misdirected luggage. Commentator Bill Harley has found out what you learn when a piece of luggage never arrives.
A couple of months ago, I got to my local airport and discovered I did not have my suitcase. Don't ask me why I forgot my suitcase. I forgot it. It wasn't there. I called my wife and asked her to bring it to the airport. She was not surprised. Disgusted, but not surprised. I told her to put it on the next flight out. The agent at the airport told me that it would be at my hotel in Utah that evening. I got to the hotel late at night. No luggage. I called the airline. The flight was cancelled. It would be at the hotel by 9 the next morning. With what little sense I had left, I washed out my shirt and underwear and hung them close to the heater and turned on the fan. The next morning, 9 o'clock, no luggage. I called Delta and I talked with Daryl. He asked me why I had forgotten my baggage. I tried to be polite. "Were you in a big hurry?" he asked. "Yes," I admitted. "I was in a big hurry. Where's my baggage?" "Well," he said, "we're trying to find it right now. It's got to be somewhere." Daryl, like all spiritual teachers, was master of the obvious. "But what am I going to do?" I said. "I don't have my bags." Daryl asked, "Well, Bill? Can I call you Bill? Do you have enough clothes for the day?" "Yes," I said. "Well, what you need to do is make it through the day. If you can make it through the day with what you got, we'll find it for you. Go get yourself a toothbrush and razor." I was out all day. I got to the hotel very late that night. No bags. I called the baggage claim office. They didn't have them. The woman said, "What's your claim number?" I told her I didn't have a claim number since I didn't hand the bag in. She said that was impossible. They never took bags without a passenger. "Where's Daryl?" I asked. "He's gone home," she said. "We'll put a search on it, although I don't know what to do if it doesn't have a claim check. We can't be sure you gave it to us. Call tomorrow." I called the next morning. Daryl was there. "Daryl," I said, "where's my bag?" "Is this Bill?" he asked. "Where's my bag?" "Well, they didn't find it, huh?" "No," I said. "I don't have my bags. They say they don't have it. They don't have a record. They don't even believe I gave it to them." He said, "Bill, I believe you. There's just a difference between what is true and what we can prove. Do you have enough clothes for the day?" "Yeah, but okay, get through the day. If you have enough for the day, then everything is all right. Call me if you want to see how things are going." That day, somebody gave me a shirt and a pair of socks out of the blue. The next morning, I called Daryl. "Bill," he said, "good news. We have your bag." "Great," I said. "When can I get it?" "No, no, no. Don't get ahead of me. I said we have it. Delta now admits to having your bag. We just don't know where it is. Do you have enough for the day?" "Yes, I have enough." "Good." I said, "Daryl, I'm beginning to think I should yell." "I'm sure you think that," he said. "But you know, people come in here, yell all the time. It doesn't really help that much. Give me a call if you need anything." I left town the next day for Wyoming. By the time I left, I'd been given enough clothes that I actually left some behind. I showed up at the Salt Lake Airport a week after I arrived. I walked into the baggage claim office. "Daryl?" I asked. "Bill?" "Here it is, right here. Little bugger spent the whole week at LaGuardia. Who knows why? Anything else I can do for you?" "Yeah," I said. "Could I call you again if I've got some trouble? Something I want to talk about?" "As long as you're traveling on Delta, or one of its many affiliated carriers." The next trip I went on, I took half of what I'd taken before. I used a smaller bag. I felt free.
Now you have 30 seconds to check and complete your work. Listen to the recording again.
The Air Transport Association estimates that 2.2 million people flew on airplanes last night, the largest number ever for a single night. While most travelers arrived home without incident, there were some problems: cancellations, delays, and plenty of lost or misdirected luggage. Commentator Bill Harley has found out what you learn when a piece of luggage never arrives.
A couple of months ago, I got to my local airport and discovered I did not have my suitcase. Don't ask me why I forgot my suitcase. I forgot it. It wasn't there. I called my wife and asked her to bring it to the airport. She was not surprised. Disgusted, but not surprised. I told her to put it on the next flight out. The agent at the airport told me that it would be at my hotel in Utah that evening. I got to the hotel, late at night. No luggage. I called the airline. The flight was cancelled. It would be at the hotel by 9 the next morning. With what little sense I had left, I washed out my shirt and underwear and hung them close to the heater and turned on the fan. The next morning, 9 o'clock, no luggage. I called Delta and I talked with Daryl. He asked me why I had forgotten my baggage. I tried to be polite. "Were you in a big hurry?" he asked. "Yes," I admitted. "I was in a big hurry. Where's my baggage?" "Well," he said, "we're trying to find it right now. It's got to be somewhere." Daryl, like all spiritual teachers, was master of the obvious. "But what am I going to do?" I said. "I don't have my bags." Daryl asked, "Well, Bill? Can I call you Bill? Do you have enough clothes for the day?" "Yes," I said. "Well, what you need to do is make it through the day. If you can make it through the day with what you got, we'll find it for you. Go get yourself a toothbrush and razor." I was out all day. I got to the hotel very late that night. No bags. I called the baggage claim office. They didn't have them. The woman said, "What's your claim number?" I told her I didn't have a claim number since I didn't hand the bag in. She said that was impossible. They never took bags without a passenger. "Where's Daryl?" I asked. "He's gone home," she said. "We'll put a search on it, although I don't know what to do if it doesn't have a claim check. We can't be sure you gave it to us. Call tomorrow." I called the next morning. Daryl was there. "Daryl," I said, "where's my bag?" "Is this Bill?" he asked. "Where's my bag?" "Well, they didn't find it, huh?" "No," I said, "I don't have my bags. They say they don't have it. They don't have a record." They don't even believe I gave it to them. He said, Bill, I believe you. There's just a difference between what is true and what we can prove. Do you have enough clothes for the day? Yeah, but okay, get through the day. If you have enough for the day, then everything is all right. Call me if you want to see how things are going. That day, somebody gave me a shirt and a pair of socks out of the blue. The next morning, I called Darrell. Bill, he said, good news. We have your bag. Great, I said. When can I get it? No, no, no. Don't get ahead of me. I said we have it. Delta now admits to having your bag. We just don't know where it is. Do you have enough for the day? Yes, I have enough. Good. I said, Darrell, I'm beginning to think I should yell. I'm sure you think that, he said. But you know, people come in here, yell all the time. It doesn't really help that much. Give me a call if you need anything. I left town the next day for Wyoming. By the time I left, I'd been given enough clothes that I actually left some behind. I showed up at the Salt Lake Airport a week after I arrived. I walked into the baggage claim office. Darrell, I asked. Bill? Here it is, right here. Little bugger spent the whole week at LaGuardia. Who knows why? Anything else I can do for you? Yeah, I said. Could I call you again if I've got some trouble? Something I want to talk about? As long as you're traveling on Delta, or one of its many affiliated carriers. The next trip I went on, I took half of what I'd taken before. I used a smaller bag. I felt free.
Now you have 1 minute to check and complete your work.
This is the end of the second part.